The House Committee on Veterans Affairs, thank you for being here today. Today is Tuesday, January 18th, and we have three presenters on today's agenda. I'd like to invite all of our members in the audience to enjoy the coffee this morning, and also I would like to call your attention to two posters that are available for you to take back to your district or your association regarding Oregon's most honorable, our military who have lost their lives in this Afghan-Iraqi war, and also a prototype of the memorial, which we'll be working on, which will be placed opposite this building, and hopefully on June 14th, which is Flag Day, we'll be celebrating the beginning of that memorial. At this time, I'd like to recognize any and all veterans in our audience, so if you would stand or raise your hand, we'd like to honor you. Would you please let us know who are the veterans in our audience? Thank you. Thank you so much for your service. This committee is well aware that freedom isn't free and wasn't free, and we thank you for this opportunity for us to be able to speak freely with you today because of your service. We are looking forward to our U.S. Representative Darlene Hooley speaking with us, and from the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, Jim Willis, our Honorable Director, and from our Federal Department of Veterans Affairs, Gerald Lorraine, the Regional Director of the Veterans Benefits Administration.
I'm not sure when the representative will be here, so I would suggest just going ahead. If your other presenters don't mind being interrupted,
okay. Do that. Okay, just a moment of conversation with our administrator here, Jim Stembridge. When the Honorable Darlene Hooley arrives, I hope if you're making a presentation, you won't mind that we stop at that point and allow her an opportunity to speak with us, as I believe she's on her way back to Washington, and we're most grateful she would even take the time to be here today. So we will begin this morning with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, the Honorable Director Jim Willis.
Chair Nelson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you very much for this invitation to appear before the committee this morning.
We're honored to have you, sir. And lest it become very expensive for you to testify today, I might remind you, as well as other members will be testifying, that we have a box located over here on the information table, and we're asking anybody who is guilty of using an acronym in this committee to make with their own integrity, to make a contribution as they leave this hearing room, should they just slip up and say something like GI Bill or AMVETS, we appreciate that, and that money will be used for our Veterans Fund. And the reason I'm reminding Director Willis is because he might have been just a little bit guilty at our first meeting of using some acronyms. Please proceed.
Well, thank you very much, Chair Nelson, and again, members of the committee. And I will pay for my transgressions from last appearance before I leave the room.
Okay.
I almost said ASAP, but I probably shouldn't do that.
Well, here we are. Okay, well, Director Willis, you're not going to have an opportunity to improperly use any acronym because the most honorable U.S. Representative Darlene Hooley has arrived, and we are so honored to have her. Let's stand and give her a royal welcome.
I will pay for her in advance.
Yes. In case Congresswoman Hooley does not know, what we're talking about is we are allowing those who use acronyms to contribute to our Veterans Fund. So should you be guilty today, well, the Honorable Director Jim Willis has offered to pay your fine. We just want to tell you how grateful we are for you, how appreciative we are of your support.
Thank you.
Our veterans and our troops.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Thank you, members of the committee, and I am so delighted. First of all, those of you that are newly elected, congratulations. There are several at the table, I see. And also how excited I am that there is now a Veterans Committee. And I think this is a very good thing to happen, and it will hopefully we will have wonderful communication between this committee and the federal government and the committee I serve on in Congress, and so we can work together on some issues. I think that's important. And thank you for allowing me to testify today. I know all of you know the great sacrifices our men and women have made who have served in our military. And I don't think that anyone who has served should ever have to worry about their health care and health care costs. Right now, we have more National Guard deployed than at any time. 1,400 are actively deployed in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other points around the world to safeguard our freedoms. We need to ensure that they have the proper equipment, the training, and support they need to successfully complete their mission and return home safely to their families. In furtherance of this goal, I've introduced the National Guard and Reserve Bill of Rights, and I did this last fall. This would provide troops and families with basic protections and a better understanding of what they can expect during the uncertainty of their deployment. We're looking for a greater parity with active military, because when we ask our Guard to serve in time of war or national security, they put their lives on the line just like every other soldier. The National Bill of the National Guard and Reserve Bill of Rights talks about several things, making sure we again have parity. One of the things they need is straight answers about their deployment. And I'll give you an example. They were originally told they would serve for 1 year. Well, the little piece they forgot to tell them is that they were going to be in training and away from their families for the first 4 to 6 months. Then, when they actually boots hit the ground in Iraq, it was another year. And then when they come back into the country at a time. So they weren't away from their families and their jobs for 1 year. They're away from their families for 18 months. They need to have the best equipment this nation has to offer. And I think all of you are very aware of some of the problems that we've had with equipment. There have been problems with compensation. They, again, need problem-free compensation, so that's something they don't have to worry about. Affordable health care, child care during deployment, right to employment when he or she returns home, education benefits and retirement plan, and I think a right to representation at the highest levels of the Department of Defense. There's no reason that as a military person moves up in rank that they shouldn't have to serve with a Guard for at least 1 year so they understand, and you're going to have an easier transition when this kind of situation happens again. This legislation didn't pass this last year, but like so many things, you have to be persistent, and I plan on reintroducing it this next session. Another issue I've been working on and would love to have your help on is ensuring that our returning Oregon National Guard members have an active support network as they demobilize from federal service and integrate back into their regular routines. I've been working with National Guard, state agencies, federal agencies, private sector, to try to make that transition as seamless as possible. We held a roundtable meeting in December of 2004, and one of the key issues that our group recognized was an increase of communication, or identified the need of increased communication. Not only with the soldiers and their families, but between the different agencies. Part of the problem is when a soldier comes back, they get all this information thrown at them. Now, what they really want to do is get back to their family and get back to their home. And it takes a while to sort of digest that information. Looking at, are there better ways to communicate? Do we need to meet initially and then a little later on? How about a website that they can go on and get the information? And looking at, do there need to be additional briefings? And how do we bring the family members into this? The most interesting thing, though, I think we identified as we had this roundtable meeting, is some of the issues with mental health. Too often, the problems don't come up the first week or the first month. It really starts happening 6 months, a year later. And again, it is working with their families, working with their employees. I mean, what happens when somebody's working and all of a sudden that employee changes behavior? And how do you educate the employers of what's going on? I think the number are rather staggering. Right now, they're talking about 40% of our returning soldiers who have been in combat have some kind of mental health issue. Let's talk a little bit about the budget for VA health care. Again, that was the thing we promised our veterans, is that they would have health care. And although we added $1.4 billion to the budget for VA health care for the 05 budget, we are still not at the funding level where we need to be. And the reason we're not at that funding level is we increase for cost of living, but the health care costs have risen much faster than regular inflation. And then we are adding to the number of veterans. So you do the combination of probably anywhere from a 15 to 20% increase in health care cost and the numbers, and you can see we're falling short of where we need to be in our veterans' health care. I am committed that every single one of our veterans, I don't care from which war or when they served, have the health care we promised them. I'm also working with other members of the House and the Senate to introduce legislation that would increase benefit for all soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines killed in combat. These benefit changes would cover all service members, regardless of rank, and would apply retroactively to our brave men and women who lost their lives in both Afghanistan and Iraq during Operation Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom, respectively. While the specific details of my legislation are still being drawn up, we're just beginning session in Congress, let me tell you a couple things we're looking at. One is to increase the servicemen's group life insurance. See, I haven't used an acronym yet, right?
No, you're doing very well.
Okay. Because I was going to give it to you, and I thought, no, I can't do that. Increase servicemen's group life insurance benefit to $400,000 while covering the cost of the first $150,000 for troops serving in combat zone. Currently, the maximum coverage under servicemen's group life insurance is capped at $250,000, so we want to bring that up to $400,000. The other thing we want to increase is the death gratuity to somewhere, we're looking at $50,000 to $100,000 for personnel killed in combat, raising it from the current cap of $12,000. Increasing this woefully inadequate benefit would substantially assist the families of service personnel lost in combat, while eliminating the financial hardship so many military families are ill-equipped to face as they deal not only with the pain of the trauma, planning a burial for husband or wife or son or daughter. I don't think we can ever fully repay the debt we owe to the brave men and women in uniform who have made the ultimate sacrifice in defense of our freedoms. But we can help lessen the financial hardship on the families who are left behind. Again, I'm looking forward to working with this committee. I'm excited that there is now such a committee, and I would be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I personally am so proud that you have stepped up to the plate and taken such a positive stand.
Thank you.
For our veterans. Questions from the committee. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to have you here, Congresswoman. I think it really is providential not only that this committee has now been formed, but that you're, I think, the first member from Oregon, at least in a long time, to serve on the House Veterans
Affairs
Committee. I'm interested, based on all the conversations, we're obviously, except for Representative Boquist, who is our...
Who knows a lot about it.
But the rest of us are...
Unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know.
Just beginning to get our hands around this. You've been, obviously, out in the field talking with a lot of veterans, back on the Hill talking with a lot of veterans groups around this. As you look at the federal responsibilities, the state responsibilities around veterans, and I realize there may be a fuzzy line at times between those, do you have any insights that you would share with us about specific things? Of all these, you probably identified about 10 or 12 areas that are in need of focus. Any that you would help prioritize for us as we look at tight budgets and radically important needs facing especially returning troops?
Well, we have a terrific state agency that I think we need to continue. And it's important to fund it. There are the various, and some of this is done with county money and some of it's done with state money, the Office of Veterans, Community Veterans, and I can't remember the name of it now. Chair Nelson, I'm as bad as you are as remembering some of these acronyms. But we have veterans representatives in our communities, and that is a great starting point, and someone right in the local community, someone that veterans can talk to when they talk about some of their benefits and some of the issues they have. So we work closely with them, and again, I think they're great help to the veterans. And I would make sure that those are continued. I think it is important again, because we've had so many Guard deployed, which have not happened in the past. And it is an interesting process that we would certainly love help on. When a National Guard person goes under state control, then under federal control, one of the things we found is there's not been a good transition. So when we found out, when I went to Fort Hood, that there our Guard didn't have sort of very basic things like toilet paper. It was because the federal government hadn't figured out that there was going to be this transition period where they hadn't started paying yet, and yet the state stopped paying because they left, state control. Now, we fixed that pretty quickly because we called the governor, and the governor sent a credit card down there, and we said, we'll have make sure the federal government reimburses you, which he, of course, was taking a chance with our saying that. So that until that those federal dollars kicked in. So I think it's looking at how you transition, and then what are the needs of our veterans in this state? Love to have you involved in this working committee that we have. Maybe Chair Nelson, you could have one member from each side of the aisle that served on that committee as we look at how we transition and how do we do that. And of course, I know how tight your budgets are, but I think one of the greatest needs is going to be your mental health services. because that's going to be more than just a responsibility to the Veterans Department. It is going to add some burden, I think, on your county and state government mental health budgets. And then talking to, I mean, I think this whole piece of, which certainly can be a state issue, the whole piece of communicating with employers on for people returning from service and letting them know that if there are problems that occur, that there's help for them.
Thank you.
That was a much longer answer than you ever needed, folks. Oh, I'm sorry about that.
We love knowledge. We figure knowledge is power, and what you know about, you can do something about it. What you don't know about that often, you know, escapes our attention and proper positive
right.
action. Yes, Vice Chair Farr.
Congresswoman Hooley, you mentioned that 40% of the returning soldiers have mental health issues.
They could have. I mean, that's a number that they're throwing out. Yeah.
So, and of course, you talked about educating their employers. Is there something that can be done initially to help them transition back in? Have there been any studies to prove that initial counseling would be helpful for them?
Well, that's one of the things we're hoping in this working group to find out. I mean, a lot of it, first of all, is not recognized for many months, or the problems don't even occur for many months. And so it is, how do you help them when they first come back? But again, their main concern is getting back to their families. And then how do you let them know and their families know and their employees know as the problems begin to arise later on? I mean, sometimes it's 6 months, sometimes it's a year, sometimes it's 5 years, sometimes it's 10 years. But how do you let them know that there is help and where they get that help?
And I guess my question, really, follow-up,
yes,
is would ongoing counseling benefit them and their families? Support groups, you know.
Well, I think it would. Anytime. I mean, I think support groups are a very good thing. And the thing that we don't have, or to a lesser extent, Guard and Reserves have than active service, is they're not all close together. I mean, if you are serving in the active military, you serve out of a base. Generally, your family is there. That's where you leave from. That's where you come back to. And the difference, if you are in the Reserve or Guard, you leave your family. Your families are scattered throughout not only Oregon, but Northern California and Southern Washington. And you just don't have the same kind of support system. So it is looking at how do we have support systems for them.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Boquist.
If you'll indulge me for just a short comment. Over the past year, and I apologize, I have a terrible cold, so first off, I don't make any sense, and second off, I sneeze. But over the past year, since my return from Iraq, I know there's been a very intense behind-the-scenes effort from five or six U.S. representatives to ensure that the Reserve and National Guard soldiers that deploy are adequately equipped, adequately trained, and adequately taken care of. And I know all those personally, those individuals personally. And, of course, one of them sitting in the room today, and I were on opposite ends of two challenger races, and I think it's appropriate that I want to point out that the one U.S. representative that I know of who has stood up outside of the box to support America's soldiers, sailors, and airmen has been Representative Darlene Hooley. Thank you, madam.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Brewer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Congresswoman Hooley.
And this is my representative.
I knew he'd want to take credit, too.
I'm your constituent, and I think you're mine.
That's right.
I want to congratulate you on the work you've put in over a couple sessions now on this veterans bill. And unfortunately, it didn't pass the last session without getting too many details. How do you feel about it this time? What needs to happen this time? I think that just the current state of world affairs puts this bill in a much better position. I would imagine that you would agree with that. And my question to you, first of all, comment on that if you would. And my question, and secondly, is there anything that this committee can do to help you. Obviously, we don't have any sway or power outside of Oregon, but is there any problem or issue with the Oregon delegation, and can we help you in any way?
Well, again, as we work together with this committee, which we're looking forward to doing, I think it is helpful that as we work out the details, and if there are things that you think we need to change or things we need to do differently, we'll certainly do that. But you have an opportunity to pass resolutions, and you can do that as the House as a whole, and that is helpful in terms of saying we support this measure, or here are some things, and we can mirror those two things with a resolution and a piece of legislation.
Other questions? Congresswoman Hooley, when we started out with this committee, I was amazed to find out that there isn't really a good definition of veteran. I want to ask Representative Boquist to speak to this, since I'm not military. We were concerned about the 179-day period and possibly the differential of benefits because of the quote definition of veteran versus a current military serviceman or woman.
Okay.
Obviously, I've done a little research for 29 years of military service, Madam Chair. I think the key issue, Representative Hooley, that I think we're going to struggle with on the committee is that the state and the federal statute, as you know, says 180 days. And without pointing fingers, and it's definitely not in the Congress, what has happened since 9/11 has been we have continually mobilized reserve component, I say reserve component, all branches, on 179-day tours so that we don't mobilize them for full time so that they are not eligible for benefits. And I am guilty of this, I'll tell the committee myself, because as a mobilization officer activated, we were, in fact, mobilizing people on 179-day tours. And so the problem lies in, at the state level, as you know, once that soldier comes back to the state, we're either going to help them under the Oregon Health Care Plan or some sort of mechanism, because the federal government has intentionally used a policy of mobilizing people underneath the definition of veterans. Federal veterans in the state is 180 days. They mobilize them for 179 days, so they are not entitled to benefits.
Okay.
We would like very much to ask for some help with that issue.
Thank you.
Also, I want you to know that we will be taking this committee to every area of the state. We'll be asking all of our senators and representatives to have district meetings in all their districts, but we likewise will be flying around the state. And our goal is not to have one family, one association, one serviceman, one veterans issues not be heard, and that's our goal, and we'll be happy to work with your staff and include them in those trips. We think this is very important. We think this is a first for the state, and it's been a long time coming, so
long overdue.
Appreciate the speaker allowing us to do that. And as the majority leader said, he couldn't think of any other committee more important to take to all points of the state. So working with our Oregon Guard, we're going to make that happen. Also, I might mention that we're concerned about incentives for recruitment. And as we watch our men come home, and we understand right now that there's a possibility 50% wouldn't stay if they could, and we look for a large group, I believe, coming home in July.
March
and July.
I'm sure you're optimistic.
Okay. But we feel, we need to do something now to incentivize, our military service. Could you help us in that area?
Well, I think there can, in fact, you need to, as you talk to veterans and you talk to Guard as they come back, what is it that would allow them to stay in the, what do they need? I think the way that they have, many of them have been treated, is certainly a disincentive for them to re-up for the National Guard. And when you are over there, and this has now changed, but if you were serving in Afghanistan or Iraq, if you were active service, you got one benefit. If you were reserve guard, you got a different benefit, and it was a lot lower. So there certainly was a disincentive to re-up. And there's also some disincentive about staying in. Retirement pay is an issue when you can retire. So there are a lot of different reasons why people won't re-up. And I think when you talk about being away from your family for that long period of time, I know Representative Boquist knows a lot more about it and has been there, but when I just walked around and talked to our soldiers in Iraq, it was, tell us how long we're going to be here. I mean, they wanted to know when they were going to come home. And it wasn't that they needed to come home today or tomorrow, but it was just tell us and we'll deal with it. But it's that uncertainty. And when after I got back, when I was talking to Secretary of Defense, we talked about that issue, and I said, you know, at first, now they've certainly gotten over this illusionment, but it was 1 year. Well, it's not 1 year. I mean, they're away from home for 18 months, minimally, because of the training piece. And I think that's a long time to be away from your family. And they miss their kids' birthdays, and they miss the birth of their children. And it is hard to keep up those family relationships when you're gone that long. So I think the length of time, and then not knowing if they're going to be there, and then because of what they're doing is critical to that mission, they're going to be asked to stay longer. So I think those are some of the reasons that provide some disincentive for people to react. And helping to identify those, I think, is important.
Also, thank you for that answer. Also, we've understood, as far as health care is concerned, that dental care is very critical. We find those reserves who are sent to overseas, you know, who've had dental problems, find themselves without proper care. And I hope that that would be covered in this health care bill.
I could spend a lot of time talking about. And again, I think it is, this is a large issue on what preparation people have before they are in fact deployed. And because these are citizen soldiers, when you're talking about Guard and Reserve, and then when they are deployed and they're there for training, if there are some dental problems, they take sort of the necessary steps to make sure that that doesn't become a larger issue when they're actually in a war zone. But there's not enough time to fix it correctly. And one of the things that I saw when I was at Fort Hood was, here was this young guy, had his front tooth pulled, was so embarrassed by it. And I said, well, why didn't they put in a, you know, false tooth or a new tooth? And it was, well, we don't have time. So it was, you pull what needed to be pulled. You didn't take care of the entire problem because they didn't have time to take care of the entire problem because they were supposed to be there training, and they were there training for X amount of time, and they wanted to make sure they had their full training time. So that's one of the things that happens. But again, that's a larger issue that I think we can work on both on the state and federal level.
Great.
Okay.
And then finally, on my notes today, if you have the time, we're concerned on the education benefits. And to be sure that, it's all for one and one for all, we're all in it together, and that's a critical element for these individuals.
I think it is, and I think that's another thing that you can, again, as you talk to people and why they haven't re-upped, I mean, I think it's one of the issues you need to look at, and I think that's one of those, education is one of those pieces that can provide an incentive for people to re-enlist.
Thank you for those answers. And are there any other questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Boquist.
Quick question, if you'll indulge me. Congressman Hilly, do you have any better feel than I do? I say I do because I'm a little close to this. On the three-year reserve extension that we're there, that the Secretary is asking the President to extend to 3 years the amount of time reserve components can be mobilized. I see in the newspaper yesterday that the Marine Corps Reserve is sending their support battalion from Oregon for a second rotation into Iraq, and I'm aware of at least two other Army Reserve units that are getting ready to do second rotations. Do you have a better feel that is the President, or is there indication he's going to sign to the three-year extension?
Representative Boquist, I don't have a good feeling on that. I mean, I don't have,
right.
I just don't have an understanding of whether that's going to go through or not.
Okay, thank you.
Also, we have been so very, very proud of our Oregon Guard and our reserves.
We should be.
And I just hope that we can make it possible with your assistance that the Secretary of Defense and the President of the United States would make a time to honor our Oregon servicemen. And we'd be happy to work on that with you.
Okay, good. Great.
If there are no other questions, we once again just want to thank you. And I want, for the sake of the recording of this meeting, I want everyone to know that we did invite our entire delegation, and we're most grateful that you made the time to be here. And thank you once again.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.
We appreciate it. Okay. At this time, before the Congresswoman leaves, perhaps Congresswoman Hooley, we should meet your staff.
Oh, I apologize. This is Bill Ward, who works with veterans issues in my district. He works out of the Salem office. And Suzanne Coons, who is one of my district directors, who works out of our West Point office. Both terrific people to get to know, contact anytime.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And just to be sure I haven't overlooked anyone, would there be anyone here from any of our other congressional members' offices? Would you come forward, please, and identify yourself?
Good morning. My name is Carmen Foer. I'm the district director for Congressman Peter DeFazio.
And would you mind to speak a little bit louder for me?
Sure. My name's Carmen Foer, and I'm the district director for Congressman Peter DeFazio.
Well, thank you very much for being here.
Appreciate
we appreciate the invitation.
I apologize on behalf of the congressman that he's unable to attend the committee meeting this morning.
We appreciate very much your being here.
Thank you.
Would you have the time to let us know what your office is focusing on?
I can briefly do that. I should say I didn't have any prepared remarks. My intention to come today was to listen to what the Congresswoman had to say. Like Congresswoman Hooley's office, we do have a full-time staff worker who works on veterans issues in our Eugene District office. His name is Frank Van Cleve. And we also have a legislative aide. Our legislative director in Washington, D.C., Tom Vinson, also focuses on military and veterans issues for the congressman as well. And those two gentlemen are good points of contact in addition to myself for any information that you may need from our office. As for specific work our office has done, the congressman has done a great deal of work on behalf of the 162nd Battalion with the Oregon National Guard, did travel with Congresswoman Hooley down to Fort Lee, and also did travel to Iraq last year to follow up with work that they did to work on providing adequate equipment and supplies for the Oregon National Guard and the follow-up in Iraq to ensure that those things were happening. And our office has been working directly with those families and with the Oregon National Guard based on information we get from them to make sure that we're following up. And the congressman's following up in his capacity with the Defense Department.
Well, we certainly hope that you will let the congressman know that we're grateful and appreciate his taking time to take that very critical trip.
Indeed, I will. Thank you, Chair Nelson.
Are there questions for Carmen? Okay, Representative
comment,
Vice Chair Barnhart.
Madam Chair, would you pass back along to
the congressman that I'm extremely grateful for the fact that he has made veterans' issues and issues involving deployment and supplies and equipment and so forth a major focus of his work in Congress. I think that's the sort of thing which is going to make sure that in the long run our troops are properly equipped and that our veterans, when they get back, are treated in the way they ought to be. And I, for one, who followed the campaigns and also Congressman DeFazio's work, appreciate that very much.
Chair Nelson, Vice Chair Barnhart, I'll be sure to do that. Thank you.
Okay, any other remarks or questions for Carmen from Congressman DeFazio's office? Okay, if not, I want to thank you very much for being here, and this really speaks to the importance that the congressman has placed on our veterans and our servicemen. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Chair. Being here.
Committee.
Committee members will be at ease for a short period of time. House Committee on Veterans Affairs will reconvene, and we had that brief break so that we could speak to the members from our federal delegation and their staffs, so certainly to express our appreciation. We have on our sign-up list to speak today three individuals, and I just love it because, of course, one of them, well, two probably really didn't know till they were here today, but even when they signed in, they used acronyms like ODVA, VA Regional Office, Oregon PVA, and I just want you gentlemen to know that we appreciate that you did that, and we likewise have our acronym Veterans Fund box there for your honorable contribution as you leave today. Just because we'd like to do this at this time, we'd like to ask Kevin O'Reilly from Oregon Paralyzed Veterans Association if you just come up for a brief introduction and let us express our appreciation to you. Do we need them? We've got space already provided there.
Good morning. My name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm with the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. And I'd just like to thank you all for the hard work that I expect you will be doing over the next few years. And hopefully we can work closely together and help out the veterans and the returning guardsmen and reservists back to Oregon. Thank you very much.
Well, we certainly want to thank you for your service, and thank you for being here today. All right, we'll continue with our agenda now, and we'll call upon our Honorable Director of our Veterans Affairs for the State of Oregon once more, and see how much money he can leave with us today. The Honorable Director, Jim Willis.
Thank you, Chair Nelson, and members of the committee. I just want to clarify that it's 25 cents per transgression. Is that
yes, sir.
Okay, then I'm 50 cents ahead.
Okay.
Because I believe I owed you for two. All right. During the last hearing that I attended with this committee, I was asked two questions. And I find it interesting that questions can be very short and huge in their impact, and both of these were. The first was an observation and a question from Representative Bo Kwik, I'll pronounce that right here in a moment. And the second came from Representative Hunt. So let me attempt to answer those. The observation was that there was a possibility that the mobilizations of our troops could be extended to a three-year period. That consideration has not occurred yet, could very well. There were those who never thought they'd see stop loss occur, which is not an acronym, I hope, but basically resulted in people remaining in the military longer than they had anticipated that they would. And based on the potential for that, plus the representative's representation that the federal government across the spectrum of veteran services in the current proposed budget is cutting at 30% of the need. And the question was, what at our level can we do with regard to the potential impacts that could occur as a result of those actions. And so I'd like to then go to Representative Hunt's question. I'm going to try to answer both of these all in one answer, and I'll be as concise as I can. His question was, what does the agency see as the unmet veterans' needs that we could deal with? And I hope I've framed that correctly. Well, thank you very much. I believe our responsibility as an organization is to be in touch with and stay in touch with the congressionally chartered veterans organizations and individual veterans who make contact with us with regard to their needs or their concerns across the spectrum of veteran services, both at the state and federal level. We do that in a number of ways, and I believe with regard to what's happening at the federal level, a couple of things are as effective as anything we could be doing. One of them is our continued association with the National Association of State Directors of Veterans Affairs. That organization is one that appears in Washington, D.C. as an organization once, at least once per year, and they will do that this March. They have a legislative agenda that affects primarily the United States Department of Veterans Affairs with regard to the kind of services that they need to be successful at the state level. And we will continue to do that. We also, under my responsibilities and that of my staff at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, do stay in touch with and speak personally with both of our United States senators and our five United States congresspersons. And when we do that, we have examples, real-world examples, of what we consider to be the needs of the Oregon veteran community, and because of our association with our national colleagues, we are able to frame them nationally as well as locally. Let me give you a success story that I hope will repeat in the next arena I want to talk about. For over 100 years, this country deducted from retired service members' retirement account. They deducted the cost of their disability payments when they were disabled veterans. That was an absolute sacrilege with regard to these people. And it was only when a member of Congress came up with the term of the disabled veterans tax that the Congress really looked at that serious situation called concurrent receipt and took action. And when I say it's historic, I mean that had been going on since the Civil War. It was horrible. So basically, a military member who honorably served his nation and was disabled as a result ended up paying for part of his disability out of his own retirement. Well, finally, that was rectified. And there were those who thought they'd never live to see it. And so if our country can rectify this 100-year blot or stain on how we treated our veterans, our disabled veterans, then it is my firm belief that we can do the same thing with regard to funding the veteran health care system of the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. So if there's an unmet need, one of them is health care. I truly believe that when we tell these folks when they come home that you're going to be taken care of, when we tell veterans of the World War II or Korea that when you need it, it will be there, then we need to have it be there. Because a lot of these folks, because of the infirmities of age and so on and so forth, don't find, as an example, a piece of shrapnel working its way to the surface and interfering with a joint function until they're in their 70s. And then they walk in and say, I was a ball turret gunner in a B-17 over Germany in World War II, and I'm having a lot of trouble with my elbow, with my shoulder, with my knee, whatever it is. And sure enough, they have a Purple Heart because they can prove they were wounded. Now they need to prove they're disabled. And then they need to get in line and get in to the federal health care system. that may result in the need of a knee replacement, elbow, or simply the care that they need to live their life more comfortably. Until or unless the health care system through the United States Department of Veterans Affairs is fully funded, having due regard for the veterans who have gone before and those young men and women who are returning from the Middle East, that promise from way back in 1945 as a result of the government issue bill, sometimes called the GI Bill, that promise will not be kept. And so that's an unmet need that I think we need to deal with. In my first appearance before this committee, I talked about another need, and that is the need for people to have a home. This body, as I said to you then, in 1945, established the low-interest state veterans home loan program that has provided over 333,000 Oregonians with their first home or a farm loan to provide the American dream, truly the American dream, my own home, place to raise my family. That is in jeopardy because of funding. And I would bring attention to this body of what was passed by the body last session, Senate Joint Memorial 6, which has been provided to Committee Administrator Jim Stembridge, and certainly would be shared with the committee as we go along. We need to have such a memorial again. This is the one that basically says to the United States Congress, when both the Senate and the House side of the Congress introduce legislation that allows the continued use of the qualified veterans mortgage bonds for the funding of our low-interest state home loans in Oregon, Texas, Wisconsin, Alaska, and California, then we need you to pass the bill. And then we need to extend the eligibility for such a loan beyond December of 1976. You see, when that date was picked, it was understood that those people who were discharged before and after December of 1976 and had a 30-year eligibility, that would take care of the whole Vietnam generation. And I don't argue with that. But it doesn't do anything for Oregonians who served in Grenada, who served in Panama, Kosovo, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and, of course, the Middle East and other hot spots around the world that we've been in, some that we know about, some we probably never know about. But in any event, this is something that we as Oregonians and this body, as the leaders of this state, have set as a public policy, and we need to work with our federal counterparts to preserve it. So that's an unmet need. The other thing that I wanted to comment on was the very good testimony I thought the other day by Jim Booker from the Oregon Employment Department with regard to their employment program and their outreaches both to disabled veterans and veterans who need a job. Just recently I went to the demobilization of some troops, some 52 Oregon troops coming back from the 2nd of the 162 in Baghdad. One of the questions asked of that group was, how many of you were unemployed when you left, when you were mobilized to go to Iraq? How many? And of those 52 people, one-third did not have a job when they left. So the question, and that's huge. I was shocked by that number. And so the challenge now is, if you had a third that weren't employed when they left, obviously you've got that number at least that we need to find employment for, and perhaps others who, because of cutbacks in their corporations or their company or what have you, are not going to be able to have a job. So that's a challenge for us. I think it's unfair to say in our state that the need is not being met by the employment division. They are meeting the need. The need is so. Then it comes down to recognizing and honoring those employers who do hire the veteran in our state. And we have a program that we are working with Director Kennedy from Employment, where we have already identified in 5 regions of Oregon employers who have emphasized and prioritized hiring veterans, and we're going to honor them in the next couple of months, and we're going to publicize that effort and hope that we can increase the number of employers that will do that. And then I want to also talk about education as being a benefit that I think we need to meet. The federal government program, the educational program offered by the federal government, is a program that does not keep pace with the increasing costs of education at our universities and colleges in this nation. It's somewhat like the health care, although health care, I think, is accelerated at a much higher rate. But even so, it's very expensive to go to college. Many of these returning veterans have families. They have to work, or they have to have some method of income to take care of their families and just the normal cost of living. So the educational benefits provided by the federal government need to keep pace with the actual cost of a university education. And we at the state level, through our state education program, need also to supplement the cost of the education for those Oregon veterans. And I must tell you that an educational benefit for veterans at the state level is not universal in this nation. Not every state offers state benefits. We do, and we have for some time. So I think Oregon has a long and honorable history of serving its veterans. And if I could tell you how far back that goes, it may be in some of the materials that's been submitted. But when people talked about how great it was that we started a home loan program here in 1945 for our military veterans, I want to point out to you that this body authorized the first home loans for military veterans in Oregon in 1921.
All right.
And it was for the World War I vet. And they funded it for a period of years, and then, of course, it went away. It was never really memorialized in law. It was just the right thing to do, and they did it. So my hat's off to this body for going that far back in our history to recognize the contribution of our veterans. So I've talked about health care. I've talked about employment. I've talked about the need to provide the affordable, low-interest home loans and, of course, education. And, of course, the need, Chair Nelson and Representative Bocas, to constantly keep up the information exchange at the federal level and continue to request that they do the right thing with regard to funding the programs at the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. And of course, the Department of Defense. So with that, I would be happy, Chair Nelson, to answer any additional questions the committee may have.
Thank you so much for your testimony today. Questions of Director Willis, members? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm in constant learning mode. I appreciate every time you're before us, I'm learning something new. I'm interested if you have either a sense in your head or information that you can access your department that helps to break down among the veterans in Oregon today as one pool and then among the returning, soon-to-be veterans, I guess, depending mm-hmm. on the definition that are coming back. Do you have a sense about how many of them are actually homeowners as one category? How many of them, if this program were expanded, the eligibility were expanded, how many might become homeowners? And then what that remaining pool of people who either are renters or who would likely continue to be renters mm-hmm. are. Do you have a sense of that, or do you have access to data?
I have a sense of it, but I would much prefer to give you a concrete answer with some really good numbers. We have a pretty good sense based on the mobilization of our Army Reserve components, our National Army and Air Guard components, and, of course, our other active duty components, as we mentioned here this morning, the Marine Corps, who's been activated several times, and we have had also Navy reservists who have been activated. So I want to make sure that I give you the good information, and also, if we can, I'd like to break it down by component pieces, the reserve components and the guard and so on and so forth. So if I may, I'd like to bring that back to the committee.
Great.
Thank you, sir.
That would be great. Other questions? Vice Chair Farnes?
I had a question, Director Willis. We received an email from Kathy Bell, who said that she had actually been unemployed from September 9th to January 3rd, and that she was at the Employment Department once or twice a week during that time, but she was completely unaware of the Veterans Program. So that was a concern that I had. What can we do to get the word out, Kate?
Well, Chair Nelson and Representative Farr, my experience has been, and again I would refer to the testimony of Mr. Booker the other day with regard to, he answered a very similar question, and my memory tells me that the disabled employment representatives and the ones that help the disabled vets, and then the ones that help the veterans at large, such as this person you've just described, do a number of community events to talk to people about what their services are and that kind of thing. The thing that might surprise you, it certainly did me, I was very surprised to hear this, is that often, and I don't know if this is the case with this lady, but when people go to the employment department and seek information, sometimes they fail to disclose that they're a veteran. And it would be very important that they do that because of how we're set up as a state to assist those folks. I don't know if that happened in this case, but I will discuss that with Mr. Booker, and if possible, if he could contact your staff, I am sure he will want to be in touch with that person, and we will do a direct outreach to her and see if we can help her out.
And I have a follow-up to mm-hmm. that. On the form that someone fills out when they mm-hmm. go to the unemployment division, is there a space that asks them a question if they're a veteran?
There is a space, if I recall correctly. However, there's no compunction on the part of the applicant to fill it out. And that's what I'm concerned about. And believe it or not, people don't do it.
That's true.
And I don't know why. I just don't know why. I can't answer that.
Could it be as simple as having whatever clerk they talked with at the unemployment division asking them if they're a veteran and letting them know that they have some benefits associated with that?
It could be, and absent my asking Mr. Booker directly about that, I don't know what they don't do that. I just don't know. I know if they make it into the counseling part, that I'm sure they discuss that with them. But I need to talk to Jim and see if there isn't a way to close if there's a gap, to close it.
Thank you.
Sure.
We'll certainly appreciate that. Other questions? Representative Kump.
Thank you. Thank you for all your information. I, too, am on a high learning curve. The question I have is about health care. Where and how do veterans access health care? I mean, I know there's the VA hospital in Portland, but if I lived in Medford, where do I access health care? And how do I do that?
Okay, well, let me, I don't want to take any thunder away from Mr. Lorang, who's about to testify before you, but there is an application process that gets you into the system, and you can do that from nearly anywhere in the state of Oregon.
Okay.
As a result of the veterans representatives who can help you. In fact, I want to correct that statement, if I may, Representative Kump. You can do that from anywhere in Oregon. Today, you can start the application process for your benefits.
Okay, but I mean, if I have this shrapnel on my arm and mm-hmm. now I need to deal with that, do I deal with that in a hospital in Medford, or do I have to go to the Veterans Hospital?
Well, in most cases, you're going to have to end up at a veterans. If it's a veterans operation that they're going to perform on you, it's usually going to be at a veterans facility. So, I'm hearing in your question, how far do some people have to go to take advantage of their
to take care of themselves
benefits? That's right. As a result of a look nationwide that the United States Department of Veterans Affairs took at their health care system facilities, mm-hmm. it's been going on for several years. None of the facilities in Oregon was targeted for closure. At the beginning, we were somewhat worried about our facility at White City, and we were worried about one of the facilities in Vancouver, Washington, which a lot of Oregonians in the metro area use.
Okay.
Neither of those were cut, which was a good thing. However, the one in Walla Walla, Washington, was scheduled for closure. That's the Jonathan Wainwright Medical Center. So myself and the Washington director, a number of other officials, attended a United States Senate field hearing in Walla Walla to discuss why we thought the closure of that facility was wrong. And this, I hope, gets at some of what you're talking about. If you're from La Grande or Baker City or Pendleton or Milton Freewater, or that general Heppner, that general area there, Boardman, your best bet would be to go to Walla Walla for the federal medical facility. To close it would have meant to go all the way to Spokane or over to Portland. And in our weather, this time of the year, as an example, that's not a doable thing. The other option was Boise, Idaho, of course. So we testified strongly that unlike the eastern seaboard states, where you can drive several hundred miles resulting in passing through three or four states, if you drive a couple hundred miles in this state, you're not where you're going yet. So you can't drive, you can't ask a disabled veteran from La Grande to go to Portland or Spokane or anywhere else in the dead of winter. So we want to keep Walla Walla. So we are fortunate in our state that in our north central and northeastern part, we have that facility. In Metro, of course, we have the facility that's serving the I-5 corridor. The Roseburg Hospital is still open, and of course, the White City operation is still open. So, now, I'm sorry, but by personal choice of geographics in our state, God bless Oregon, if you choose to live in John Day or Burns or Lakeview, you know, you're going to, in most cases, have to do what we call windshield time, which many of you on your campaigns probably did a little of, in order to get where you need to go. It's the nature of our state. We're the 10th largest state geographically in the nation. It's a big place. So there is some time. But we are fortunate we didn't lose a facility.
Thank you, Representative Nelson.
Representative Kopp, I might bring up, not because...
Oh, you gotta find me?
No, I'm sorry. I just want you to check your conscience as you leave today.
I don't know.
No, I don't know either. Seriously, I have sponsored a resolution every session I've served in this great house, and to give our veterans the right to access any medical care. And I hope this is an issue that we really work hard on with our medical experts in the state. As I understand, it's a paperwork issue. It doesn't relate to not having enough physicians or dentists or ophthalmologists, and it's just, you know, getting a move on. And since we're an action committee, I look forward to us making that happen. I think requiring individuals who have traveled, you know, across the world to defend our freedom, requiring them then to, you know, get in a car, drive 6 and 8 hours to possibly get even a doctor assigned to them at the Veterans Hospital. I'm not talking about the appointment. It could last another 6 months before they even get an appointment, and then another year to 2 years before they get the service they require. Is a disgrace. So I hope we'll continue to push on that issue. Other questions for Director Willis? If not, once again, we thank you. I wonder if I could just ask if we could get some clarity to how our military in the state is involved in the Homeland Security program, and if we also have some possible pools that we could become a part of with other law enforcement, since today is the Sheriff's Day at the Capitol,
right.
Other law enforcement groups that possibly by pooling sources we could provide greater insurance benefits for all who are involved in fighting crime and terrorists and all the other negative elements. So I would appreciate very much hearing that, and also if we could get some clear counts of the homeless, the like we talked about, the unemployed. We're also very mindful that we may have a drug problem in our state. This has been brought to our attention, and we certainly want to be intervening on behalf of our veterans and our servicemen and their families. Thank you. So
thank
much.
You, Chair Nelson.
Look forward
thank you,
to
members of the committee.
Having you here again, and thank you for bringing your great staff.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have from the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs, and we're grateful, Gerald Lorraine. He's our regional director for Veterans Benefits Administration, and welcome, Director Lorraine.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and the committee. I'm a little awestruck to be here. It's, as a federal civil servant of 30-some years, I first of all might ask if I could use a credit card instead of pay cash. I don't believe I can offer any without being fined.
Well, your credit is probably better than the state, so I don't know why. Anything that would enhance it.
Oh, thank you very much for that indulgence.
Madam Chair, in
yes.
spirit of cooperation, I'll pay his fines for it.
Oh, well, we appreciate that, Representative Vogel.
I'll do my best. Thank you.
No foo bar.
I am thrilled to be here. I think that one of the things that we talked about briefly before the session today was that the structure of service to veterans is rather loosely knit, and it's a confederation of people whose hearts are huge and whose intents are nothing but great. Behind me sit the members of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, whose alliance with us has been so strong that we've been able to deliver benefits, I think, exceptionally well to veterans who would otherwise not be served. And I'm pleased that they get recognition and wish for continued support from them. The entire circle, and I called it a circle earlier, of support to veterans, I believe rests in the center on the package of federal benefits. I don't think that's self-serving for me to say it is the most generous package of benefits offered by any nation in the world ever. And we're very proud to be able to do that for our veterans. Are there gaps in the service that we provide? Yes, there are. Are there concerns today that need to be addressed? Yes, of course there are. But for the package that's delivered, it is the most comprehensive that's ever been offered before. To veterans in the state of Oregon, there are 370,000 of them from all periods of war. And those 370,000 veterans receive benefits from at least two parts of the VA. I guess for those who no longer live, they receive benefits from three parts of the VA, the National Cemetery Administration as well. But the medical side of the house provides a tremendous amount of care. And I wish for the committee to ask for their report on the service that they provide. I believe that some exaggeration has occurred in their ability to serve and deliver service timely to veterans. Great efforts have been made, and I think wonderful accomplishments have been achieved, and I think they would deserve their time in front of you to be heard. I'm cautious about speaking on their behalf. I might put words in their mouth that they can't speak for or live up to. Yeah, I did share with the committee administrators some information about how to contact them, and I know they'd be willing to offer some support. For the sake of the benefits that are delivered, I am exceedingly proud of what we've done for the veterans in the state of Oregon. I guess I should begin my story by saying I was assigned for many years to our office in St. Louis. And when I was assigned to the Portland Regional Office, I was very excited about it. I arrived here in May of 2003. I drove the route of the Oregon Trail and wondered along that route why someone would walk for 10 months, 2,000 miles, to be anywhere. I know now why. And I love this place, and I'm proud to be able to serve here. The 370,000 veterans in the state receive benefits from the Veterans Benefits Administration, 40,000 of them in the last year, to the tune of $500 million. That work is something that we're very proud of. In the office that I work in, calendar year 2004, nearly 13,000 claims were resolved that involved rating of disability. Nearly 31,000 claims involving the full span of benefits were resolved. And in that same period of time, a great deal of activity occurred in support of the veterans as the basis of that federal benefit package that's available. I should talk to what that package includes. There are insurance benefits that accrue to veterans who continue to purchase insurance coverage beyond their service in the military. There are education benefits that accrue to active duty military who choose to participate in the program by contributing to their program. There's a secondary education program, and I really, for those people who work in this program, it's an insult to call it secondary. It is probably the primary reason why we exist. It is the vocational rehabilitation and employment service that we provide. Veterans who are disabled in service receive support in terms of achieving gainful employment. In the last year, we had nearly 3,000 veterans in the state of Oregon seeking that benefit. Over 2,000 in programs. We had a 75% rehabilitation rate for those in the program, which means that they graduated to gainful employment or were placed in an independent living environment, which allowed them to live independently. Very proud of that program, and it is a cornerstone of our work. The other programs that we administer as well are the compensation and pension benefits that are received, and the largest quantity of the dollars that are received in the state of Oregon are attributed to the compensation program from our benefits package. All of those benefits delivered are exciting for us, and we're thrilled to be a part of doing it. But it doesn't happen for veterans in the state of Oregon because we are in an office in Portland. It happens because we have this strong coalition of support and help from the state, from local governments, and from independent organizations like the Disabled American Veterans and the American Veterans and Vietnam Veterans of America. And if I go through all of them without using an acronym, I get an award.
You haven't cost me any money yet.
I'm working on it. And so many more that I won't name because I will wind up having to pay. All of them are wonderful, and they reach out to the veterans in a way that the federal mandate doesn't allow us to. When a veteran comes to us and says, I'm hungry, I can process a claim, I can attempt to get them the benefit they deserve for a check that they might receive in the mail, it doesn't satisfy the hunger that they have. When they report to the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs or to one of the service organizations or to many other places in the state, they get food, they get support, they get a kind of help that we can't provide. That kind of coalition, that reaching out into the far reaches of the state to serve veterans is so very important. I don't have the ability nor the mandate to do that. But in support of everything that you do, I would ask as you visit the districts, if you find a veteran in need, call me. I gave my card to the committee assistant, and I would ask each of you to have one. We find ways to serve veterans. It's so very difficult for us to provide the assurance individually for a veteran that in every way, on every day, we'll serve them, but we try. And I think that's the most important thing we can do. There are anecdotes, some of them very unfortunate, about service to veterans. All of us, no, it wouldn't be fair to say, some of us are old enough to remember the challenges that we faced post-Vietnam and how we may have failed in addressing those challenges. The Department of Veterans Affairs, U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, strongly feels that we need to assure that never occurs again. We're making some great strides, I think, in identifying the veterans who are returning from Iraq and Afghanistan to assure that those who are severely injured are being provided the greatest treatment and the greatest access to benefits. I want to say that because of the support from the Department of Defense, those kind of cases are relatively easy to identify. They're being brought to centers like Walter Reed or to the Burns Center in Texas or to other places where they're getting extraordinary care, and they're being identified for us. Our greater challenge is the person who returns to their daily life without realizing that they have a disability, without realizing that they carry with them the burden of war. And with all of your help, with the help of the service organizations, with the help of the State Department of Veterans Affairs, as they are identified, we will deliver the service they deserve. That's our commitment. One of the things that I'd like to mention that I'm very proud of is that the state of Oregon, the veterans in the state of Oregon, receive a larger pro rata share of benefits than all but six other states in the nation. And I don't think that it's limited to the fact that we're exceedingly generous in our office in Portland. There are some people probably in this room who would argue with me over that. But I can assure you that it is with the help of the service organizations and the Department of Veterans Affairs here in the state that we're able to do that successfully, and we're very proud of it.
Would it be possible, Director Lorraine, to know those other states?
Sure, I could get you that information. I don't have it on the top of my head.
And would it be possible to get, and we'd be grateful for it, a comparison of ours on some type of grid with those six other states?
Sure.
Thank you so much.
That's all
we
available.
Appreciate that.
Absolutely. Be glad to do that for you. I really could go on, and partly because, my father, who died in 1996, was a veteran of World War II, and I'm sure he's very proud of me sitting here today and wonders whatever brought his son to a place like this. It's because I care. I know the people I work with care deeply and want to be sure that benefits are delivered the best they can be. Rather than do that, Madam Chair, I would ask if there might be some questions I can answer for you.
Thank you very much for being here today, and that just proves you care because you came. Could you tell me your staff organizational overview? It's my understanding that the counties are about to be cut with their, and I don't quite understand financing, but they explained to me it's federal funds, so I didn't talk to Director Willis about it, but I understand it's your area, and we don't want those county veteran directors to be cut.
I think I understand the question. I know that I don't manage any accounts, and I'm not aware of accounts within the VA that provide funding to county service officers. Mm-hmm. If I'm misspeaking, I will do some more research. Mm-hmm. It is those positions. In fact, it is a curious thing. I have worked across the country in a number of states, and individual county veteran service officers are funded by many different means and are authorized in many different ways to do many different things. It's always something of a challenge to cross state lines then and do what I do, because then I have to reintroduce myself to a new process. I find the county service officers in this state to be as proactive, as passionate about their work as anyone I've ever seen, and any effort to support them would be something we'd like to see happen.
And if I could just ask, and I often don't know how to put things in the proper military language, so please forgive me, but have you found that it's the delay in the campaign ribbon being put on a soldier's record that is delaying his ability to get his benefits?
No, not exactly. I would say that it facilitates, it makes it easier to have the campaign ribbon in the record, especially in cases where we're attempting to identify post-traumatic stress disorder. But for most cases, the need for the ribbon is not so important in terms of the claims process. It certainly is possible for us to identify from other parts of the military record the fact that an individual served in a combat zone or had a stressor that could cause post-traumatic stress disorder. So I would suggest that that's not the case. Perhaps, if I may, I'm going to drift off and I'll come back. I want to say there was a six-month period in the last year when we received a 30% increase in claims. And our first reaction was that we were seeing Iraqi and Afghanistan veterans coming to us. As we analyzed that more deeply, we found that, in fact, the greater percentage of those new claims were coming from Vietnam-era veterans. Mm-hmm. Our greater challenge is that their records are complete and accessible to us. So for a recently released veteran from service, those records are pretty accessible for us. It's very unlikely that we would have a hard time finding what we need to resolve a claim. But for someone whose claim is first coming to us 30 years after they served, those records are a greater challenge for us.
Thank you. Other questions?
that it? Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious if you know, and I've got one answer in my left ear here from Representative Boquist. I'm curious if you know why you got that big run-up in Vietnam veterans' claims at that time.
I don't have a statistically valid answer for that.
I wasn't asking for that.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if you had a statistically valid answer.
We actually tried. That was what we were attempting to do when we identified the claims as they came in the door. Our sense is that there is... I think I want some credit to go to the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs for the outreach that they've done. I believe that they are putting into the veteran community a kind of confidence that speaks to a change in how we do our work. There was a time when those veterans may have been dissatisfied with the service they got from the Department of Veterans Affairs, were embarrassed for that, and were going to fix it. And the word is out. I think there's some little bit of that involved. I also think that the fact that we're in a conflict, and the conflict is in everyone's eyes every day, brings those kinds of events to everyone's heart. And for an individual who might be entitled to benefits, they're being encouraged to apply now. I believe that's happening. There are some who say that it might just be the time in life, Vietnam veterans reaching a point in their life where they have greater needs than they had before. I don't know how to quantify all of that, but I think each of those are pieces as to why we had that increase. Even in the last quarter, we saw an 8% increase. The 30% increase was very exciting and a little bit scary for us. We have our arms around it, and I think we can manage it. But the fact that it's still increasing and not tailed off tells me that there is some outreach going on, that we are reaching veterans who would otherwise not have come to us or had come to us in the past and were dissatisfied.
Thank you.
Sure.
Madam Chair.
Representative Boquist, you want to tell us what Representative Barnhart knows that the rest of us don't
know? Well, ma'am, I think since we can speculate and people testify and don't want to speculate, Madam Chair, I think it's rather simple. I mean, we're seeing war on the television. And I'll tell you from my personal perspective, having been, marched across most of Africa for the last two decades, and you've been there, Madam Chair, you relive it every time you see it. The 10,000 dead you saw someplace, you see on television the second it comes up. And so I think that we're, now that we're in a serious conflict that is in some ways outside of the political spectrum resembling Vietnam, people are reliving that. And so they're coming, as you may have mentioned, Mr. Director, they're coming back to the, in my personal opinion, they're coming back and recognizing that, that there's a problem. And it's not 18 months later. My two colleagues on my left and right are worried. They're looking at an 18-month date when I got back from Iraq, just in case I go postal. Madam Chair, I have a question for the Director, if you'd entertain me. The committee is struggling, and you heard me speak earlier about the 179-day problem. And as you raised the issue of campaign ribbons, and could you expand upon the Veterans Administration's definition of a veteran? Because you get a campaign ribbon if you're in combat or you're participating, I think now, in the war on terrorism. I don't have one because I never put on my 214. But and address the issue. What happens to those people that are on 179-day tours that are posted to Umatilla, guarding Umatilla Army Depot? Do they qualify as a veteran under the federal statutes? Could you just expand on the definition, if you would, please?
National Guard.
National Guard also, if you can craft. I don't know if you're... Yeah, I think we're all in federal... They're all in federal order, so... You could, please.
I could go on and on, and I'd be cautious about being sure of everything that I say. Let me offer first, Madam Chair, that I would like to provide for each of the members of the committee a copy of a federal handbook it's an attempt to make short the laws that govern all of what we do. Each of the benefits that are provided by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs comes with definition, and some of those definitions vary, and so that it might be said that 180 days is a definition for a veteran, and that really is very standard in most of the benefits, but it is not in all benefits. Let me offer that anyone on active duty for any length of time who suffers an injury or incurs a disability is considered a veteran and receives benefits. There's no time limit for that sort of thing. And that would apply as well to someone who's on active duty in Umatilla, as well as for a veteran who is, or a service member who's in Iraq or Afghanistan. Active duty is active duty, and an injury or a disability incurred in active duty is service connected, whether it's one day or 180 days or a lifetime. So for the sake of those kind of things related to disabilities incurred in service, the time frame is not important so much as the documentation of the disability and the percentage. For other benefits, loan guarantee and for education, and like those time frames and requirements vary based on the law. And I think you'd be best served if you had that booklet to work with, because each of... And I can also tell you that I don't remember all of the rules and regulations in my head. I wish I did.
Well, we appreciate that, and I had a note to ask for it, so go ahead, Representative Boquist.
Chair, follow up. When you send that back, could you, and Madam Chair, this is not an acronym, but I can't define these, okay?
Okay.
So I'll pay 50 cents.
Okay.
Because I'm going to bring two of them. When you bring that back, send that back, could you identify the difference between Title 10 and Title 32 active duty? Because I would beg to differ with you. I mean, I believe Title 32, you're not entitled. Because I've been down this road so many times in this state already. But if you could at least do a little bit of research to clarify for us if active duty does include Title 10 active duty versus Title 32 active duty. Because I do believe, I know for a fact, that under Title 32 that there are health issues and recovery. Because, and I think Mr. Willis would testify to this, that we have National Guard soldiers that are injured, Madam Chairman, under Title 32, that is technically active duty, but not does not qualify for active duty, and they fall through. And this is long before this war. They've always fallen through the cracks, and we've always had to argue this case and try and get a line of duty investigation done to get it corrected to get them into a different active duty category. I guess what I'm saying, Madam Chair, active duty is not equally active duty.
And,
thank you.
Thank you. We will appreciate that help.
I will be happy to do that research, certainly.
And Representative Boquist, is this a state issue that we can change, or is this a federal issue?
No, this is it's really not a problem. Well, yes and no, ma'am. Well, we can't change it, but we can influence the outcome.
Okay.
It's not something we can change in state statute. This is federal
statute.
And it's something that I believe when, and I believe he's coming, Colonel Caldwell, the state director, and our adjutant general, the Brigadier General Ray Byrne, when they come, I think they can address effectively too.
Good.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great.
May I make a comment?
Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. You know, I the more I learn about this issue, the more convinced I am that we have to have a clear explanation of the reality of it and what it means. And I agree completely with Representative Boquist that one of the things we can do is publicize it. If in fact the results are unjust or unfair, because this particular conflict is one in which we are relying much more on National Guard than in other recent conflicts, at least the difference in treatment between National Guard activated troops and regular troops may be more significant than it's been in the past, and if there are differences, we ought to know what they are, and we ought to be prepared to go out and publicize them to the extent that those differences lead to an injustice for people who are in the National Guard.
Thank you. Also, I would ask Director Lorraine if we could have some clarity, having spent at least one third of my life working with military men in aviation. I need to understand the scope of benefits in the military versus those supplied by an employer, and also for their families. I'm just curious, for example,
please,
if I could, the cost of the medical care beyond service, if they retired from the service, which in aviation happens a lot,
sure.
Is that cost higher than we than it is, you know, while we're on the VA?
Just get it? Oh, I wasn't going to do that.
Okay, the Veterans Administration Program. Okay.
You're zero, she's better.
Dear, I was going to be able to say in August, look who, you know, didn't do that. But I'm concerned about the cost for these families and these men and women who've served when they then become, for example, an employee of Evergreen International Aviation, which happens to be, you know, my former employer. How do these benefits relate to one another?
I'm cautious about answering that only because each employer benefit is somewhat different. And so to make the comparison, I can only offer you what's available in the federal package for a retiree, if I understood your question.
Well, this is what I'm concerned with. You know, I don't want us to forget these individuals, you know, who retired. And,
right.
I mean, is the cost of their insurance, you know,
let me bring you
tremendous
the data,
and
if I may.
I don't know
like
what they even have to pay. I don't know if there are pools for these retired veterans. So I'd like very much to know.
I'd be happy to bring you that information.
I'm sad that they even have to go elsewhere to get, you know, additional coverage. I think it should be lifetime. Personally. Okay, other questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Buckley.
Just one quick question, and looking for the director's opinion, Madam Chair, and for Jim's opinion. Which entity, this is not an acronym, man, but I can't tell you what it stands for either. Which entity would be best able to explain the benefits of TRICARE, which is a health care plan, to the committee, in your opinion? National Guard Bureau, who do you think could explain it to the committee best? Because as an important component of the health care provided to reservists mobilized, and I have a personal opinion of it, it ain't good, but then I know people who think it's great, but who's the best entity that could tell us the ins and outs of TRICARE, or is there a TRICARE representative in the state we could call upon for expertise?
I'm at a real disadvantage. In my position, I don't think I could answer the question as well as someone else.
Okay. And also, well, let's go to the two other plans that I'm aware of in the state, and if we could, Mr. Administrator, you can handle this.
Director Willis.
Oh, Director Willis.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I may join my colleague here for just a moment. No,
if
please
you would,
be seated.
Just identify yourself.
I'm Jim Willis, Director of the Department of Veterans Affairs here in Oregon. This Thursday, I believe Dr. Jim Tuchmet is going to appear before the committee, and I believe if Administrator Stembridge will let him know ahead of time that TRICARE is an issue, I join my colleague, Director Lorang, in telling you that I know what it is, I know what some of the challenges have been, but as far as the intimacy in which the committee would like to know about it, I am positive that Dr. Tuchmet and his staff are the people that can answer that question.
Great.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks, Jim.
Very
good.
Right. Yes, Administrator Stembridge.
Yes, I just want to clarify. I think we've invited Mr. Tuchmet for next week. I think it'll be Tuesday, but we're still working out the details.
Another question at this time? Yes, Director Lorraine? Well, we are most grateful that you came. We'll look forward to having your counterparts on these other three areas of federal benefits come and speak to us. I think it's very important that we're as knowledgeable as possible. In that way, we'll be able to be of greater help to our veterans and our military men and women and their families.
I hope you find the Department of Veterans Affairs, U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, to be your strongest supporter.
Thank you so very much.
Great.
Appreciate your being here.
Thank you.
Do we have any other individuals who would like to testify before this committee today? If not, we thank you very much for being here. We appreciate you, and we'll see you on Thursday. This committee is adjourned.